Hip-hop might not be the first kind of music you think of when you think about the mountains of Appalachia. We have our share of fiddles and banjos, but a few months ago, my daughter said something like, "Mom, I love your show, but why is it always like dueling banjos, you know?" And she's right. We're not all fiddles and banjos here in Appalachia. So today, we go on a journey to explore some of the hip-hop communities in Appalachia. We'll start in Beckley, in southern West Virginia, where the Movement Entertainment Group has hosted an award ceremony for the past 4 years. It's part of the Dub V Fest. What's the Dub V Fest, you ask? Well, let's start with the name Dub. It's short for W, as in West, and the V is short for Virginia. So in hip-hop street, or maybe even youth slang terms, it's another version of the West Virginia Music Festival. This one mostly celebrates hip-hop, though. So think like a weekend music festival like Floyd Fest, Cliff Top, or Bonnaroo. Only it's held indoors, usually at a nightclub, and features mostly hip-hop artists from out of state. It started about 7 years ago. Some performers, headliners, included Hoobastank, Saliva, and DJ Unk. But it also supports local talent and even hosts an award ceremony for West Virginia artists. Brian Reznor is the promoter and organizer of the festival.
The talent is so heavy in the hip-hop world in West Virginia that you wouldn't believe it. If you're in New York and you're like, oh, in West Virginia there's a bunch of really good rappers, everybody's going to laugh. Right. No one's going to say, oh, I'm sure there are. You know, it's not going to happen, but it's true.
The awards include Artist of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Up and Comer of the Year, Best Single, and Best Video. Some past winners of Artist of the Year include Ponce de Leon from Wheeling, West Virginia. And Fams from Princeton, West Virginia. And last year's Legend Award was Jamie Smith. The Legend Award honors pioneers or folks who have influenced the scene in West Virginia. Brian Reznor describes the award as a sort of Hall of Fame. It started about 4 years ago. Back in the early 2000s, Jamie was one of the only artists creating or producing hip-hop in the region.
It was like Jamie inspired a culture that didn't really exist in this area before him. After he started doing his thing, then all kinds of little groups popped up. People popped up out of nowhere, everywhere. We're rappers too, and we've got this, and we're doing this.
A hip-hop DJ working on turntables isn't like your typical radio disc jockey, but an artist, and even part of the show. A turntable DJ will create beats and mixed sounds live. There are programs like Serato that enable a DJ to modify or manipulate the sound of electronic files by moving the record at a certain speed on the player, just as you would a vinyl record. So Jamie had gained regional legendary status for his work behind the turntables, also known as vinyl record players, and the award was meant to recognize his talent.
I'm not into horn tooting, including mine, especially mine, probably, but, you know.
Horn tooting?
Horn tooting. Not into horn tooting, all right? I don't be tooting people's horns. I want my horn tooted. But they tooted, you know, and I was like, okay, thanks, guys.
So what's the story behind Jamie's hip-hop DJ producer career? Well, he shared at least part of the story with us. Jamie's music is sometimes a hybrid of traditional Appalachian music with a hip-hop breakbeat. Jamie's father influenced his love for music at a young age.
He is, I would say, 100% responsible for the music side of me. Because when when I was young, he not only would put guitars in my hands and stuff, but would take me to, you know, parties at somebody's house or something, and just everybody's around a campfire just playing music, and he taught me how important that was to me, so I definitely thank him for that.
His dad played in a band and would often perform in bars. Jamie taught himself how to play guitar, started a punk band, and had his first gig at age 13 against his mother's wishes. She worried he might end up in the bar scene too. Still, Jamie says music of all sorts, bluegrass, gospel, classic rock, was a regular part of family gatherings.
When everybody is in a circle like that and they're all on the same level, on the same page on this tune, and they're all, you know, it inspires the same emotion in everybody that you're sitting there enjoying that moment with. And that's just, it's so powerful. It's just unbelievable, the healing power, or the, I mean, you know, music can make you feel a million different ways, whatever the song's feeling, but the fact that you can transfer that feeling from just an idea to sharing it with everyone sitting in that, you know, it was very powerful to me.
Playing in a circle with some of his family is still part of his life. Here's Jamie playing the banjo with some of his friends and his father on guitar singing the old hymn, "Will the Circle Be Unbroken?" The first hip-hop he fell in love with was in the early to mid-90s era, like the huge album hit Dr. Dre, The Chronic.
One, two, three, and to the four, Snoop Doggy. And I was feeling all that, like I was vibing. I had The Chronic, you know, as a young, you know, I'm 9 years old or something. And it's funny, my dad gave me a copy of it. My dad is, like I said, he's the looser one, okay? Certainly, if he heard a song that had swearing and stuff in it, whereas my mom would probably cover my ears and turn it off, my old man's like, Jim, you need to hear this, man, it's so funny. And he had a couple of the songs off The Chronic. He's like, man, you gotta listen to this. These guys are giving these other guys up and down the road because they're, like, warring with other rappers and they're talking trash on them, and we just laughed, like, just laughed. It was so great. And that was more of a parody kind of thing for me. I was so young. Like, the first stuff I was really in love with. It's like this and like that and like this, Anna. It's like that and like this and like that, Anna.
It's like this and like that and like this, Anna. Drake creeped to the mic like a... Jamie and his friends started entertaining themselves in the small town by experimenting with electronic sounds with a hip-hop rhythm.
We were producing it in my mom's living room when I was in high school, making beats on crappy keyboards and using borrowed four-track tape recorders to produce singles and albums and stuff. And we were emulating in a lot of ways the guys that we loved. Maybe in the back of your mind you're always like, yeah, this could turn into something. But at the end of the day, we're making it to make ourselves happy and to try and share stuff with people, you know, the people in our collective crews. Like, it wasn't, you know, I don't think we really thought it was going to balloon into multi-millionaire status or anything. We were just doing it to be the dopest rapper or the dopest DJ around.
Jamie started putting out mixtapes under the label Ill Kinetics. A mixtape's basically taking mainstream music or produced music and putting your own style, blends, and sounds in a compilation of music. The music was gaining popularity in Southern West Virginia, and Jamie was pretty confident in his work until he heard from this crew out of Morgantown.
And kind of hearing this standard that they had, which was a lot higher than the stuff we were putting out, and I was like, boys, we gotta step it up.
The Morgantown crew was led by Eric Jordan and artist 66240. The crews eventually met up and wound up collaborating on Ill Kinetics mixtape Volume 8. 66240.
In the place. Come on, y'all. Yeah. It feels so good to be here, y'all. For real. I'm with my big chief. And we came to bring destruction. Yep. Ill Kinetics mixtape volume 8. Yep. My nigga JLS, the soundboard killer. And this is a present to y'all. Come on, hey yo, about to run the pitfalls.
Jamie usually worked with one of his childhood friends, Beckley native rapper that went by the name Nauseous, because, as he said, his lyrics made you sick, as in you'd be sick with jealousy because his raps were so dope. Man that walks the face of the earth that can't speak and hear no. Even he don't see in front of his eyes, cause it's trite devil that won't bleed, ain't willing to die. Till I see your De Niro, cause I'm gangster like Pacino, De Niro, in casino, the good fellow, Spencino, so blackjack, crap, and Rileto, gang clapping this girl, rule hood ghetto. Brian remembers the first time he heard Jamie or DJ JLS perform with Nauseous.
And this guy literally rapped all night long.
And Nauseous?
Yeah, and we're not talking about songs. We're not talking about him doing songs. We're talking about him freestyling over Jamie's beats, about things that are going on in the room. And he just continued, and he didn't stop. And he just kept going and kept going to the point where everybody in the bar is now looking at this guy like, wow, he just doesn't stop.
Then Jamie was robbed. Someone broke into his house and stole all of his production equipment, including beat machines, samplers, a keyboard, everything but the turntables and records.
Leave the turntables and all the records, because who's going to haul that heavy crap out, right? So for like a year, 2 years, I didn't even have recording gear. I just had the turntables and the records, and that's really where the monster that became DJ JLS was born, was out of this necessity, you know, of not having the stuff that I wanted to be doing, you know, but I've got this other stuff, and I'm like, well, I'm going to create however I got to do it. This will continue. And so that wound up being, I believe, one of the more profitable music ventures I ever did, was DJing, which happened completely out of accident.
Jamie moved away to California with Nauseous and continued to work on music projects. He says California introduced him to a lot of musicians, producers, and rappers, and some of them produced what he considered good material, but a lot of them didn't. He says that there just weren't as many standouts there as there are in this place he calls home, West Virginia.
But here I think it's just condensed, raw talent, and everybody has the same, you know, everybody wants to get something off their chest about the struggle here, because it is a struggle. It's certainly not easy. And, I think we're blessed to have the artist community that we have here. Not just in, you know, in Beckley, of course, in southern West Virginia, but West Virginia as a whole. We have a very robust artist community, and I'm proud to be a member and a patron and a fan of it, and, you know, I'm going to do my best to help any way I can.
He doesn't work much as a DJ anymore. Every now and then, he'll pull out the decks. He's still producing music, though, as part of his company, Kid, in the background. But now, instead of making music with a crappy keyboard, he works in a professional studio. It's not all hip-hop these days. Here's one of the latest recordings he's produced of musician by night, beer distributor by day, Matt Mullins.
Marilyn Cotton seemed so nice. All she wanted was to be the wife to a man who'd love her bad just the same. They settled in Plymouth by the sea, such a young girl to raise a family, and see that evil side got the best of her. So if they catch you, they're gonna kill you there. If they catch you, they're gonna kill you there. And so she served them all their fate. Do what she put down on those plates. Mary, why did you have to send them all away? But after one, when she was unsung, found her three, her husbands, got them and the kids just the same. But if they catch you, they're gonna kill you there.